Do you love to love? Do you have a tendency to monkey branch from one relationship to another without much time in between to explore your own needs?
Yeah.
This podcast is for you. I'm Carmen Bertlin and I'm a neurosemantics coach, yoga, meditation teacher, and I love to love. Ever since the 1996 adaptation of Romeo and Juliet, where he drank poison and she blew her brains out for their love, I've been a romantic. This is my big leap from serial monogamous to feeling fulfilled as a single person. And so can you. Consider this a guide to becoming your single best self, so that when you meet someone, they're not a life raft. They're an added bonus. Welcome to the single best. I'm excited to be in your ear. The last few weeks, I've had an additional spring in my step going to the gym because there is a guy there that I fancy. Me and my friends refer to him as Gym Guy. I've seen him for months, and a few weeks ago, I smiled at him, he smiled back, and since that day, we've had minor interactions. And by minor interactions, I mean exactly that. Apart from smiling at each other, nothing else has been said other than, "Hey, is this bench free?" or "You can use this if you want." The vibe has been a little bit flirty and he got me feeling excited. Let's just say that he's been on my mind. And last Tuesday, I felt, it's time. So I went proper old school and I wrote my name and number down on a piece of paper and I slipped it under his water bottle as I walked by without saying anything, oozing an air of mystery. Or at least that's what I'd like to think. The truth is that after I decided that I was going to approach him, my heart was pounding so hard, so there was no chance that the conversation that I rehearsed in my head was going to go as smoothly as I planned. So in my head, I was going to walk over to him in slow motion. I was going to flick my hair and look him dead in the eyes, confident as when I'm ovulating. Then I was going to remain in my feminine energy whilst letting him take the lead by saying, "So, I'd like to be taken out on a date. What do you think?" I even had a line rehearsed for what I was going to say if he was going to reject me. I was going to be playful and say, "Oh, pardon, I must have been mistaken. I could have sworn there was a vibe here." Walked away with my dignity intact. But instead, he got the note, like in high school, because I was feeling a little shy. When I walked out the gym, he looked over and smiled and I thought, it's on. It is on. I was on such a high driving home. Then I saw an unknown number pop up on my screen twice, and I couldn't wait to get home and read it. But the messages weren't from him. They were from his wife. Yes, sir. First, there was a photo that he'd taken of my note that he was holding because I could see his shoes. And he'd probably sent that then to his wife. And the message from her was saying, "He's married, smiley face, peace fingers." I'm going to be super transparent about my reaction now, although I'm feeling a little bit silly about it because, you know, let's keep this podcast real. So at first I thought he couldn't even text me himself. He had to have his wife do the dirty work for him. And I felt a little bit annoyed at that. And then I thought about it for a moment, took a breath. Come on, this guy's married. And he wants to keep his wife in the loop, which is great. He wants to do the right thing, so he lets her in on what happened, which totally raises his value in my eyes. Loyalty, transparency, honesty, what excellent traits to have. More of that, please. Thanks. Then his wife gets to break it to me gently, and voila. This means that his number is not on my phone, and mine is probably not on his. Pretty clever arrangement. Just in case, you know, temptation sets in, as with human nature. Her name sounded exotic and beautiful, like some Brazilian goddess. She was so cool, too, the way she handled the whole thing. Smiley face and peace fingers. What a cool couple. Gorgeous and chill. They're probably having banging hot sex after that. Him asking if he was a good boy and her rewarding him for honoring the most basic term of their marital agreement. Thou shall not cheat. God, I miss being in a relationship sometimes. That whole us against the world team spirit. I have to admit that it was a bit of a lull after reading that text. Again, I'd let my runaway train of a mind escalate to 100. I let myself get a little too excited about him. My gym guy, whose real name I'll possibly never know. If this was 4 years ago, him being married wouldn't have been a dead end. I'm not proud of this, but I have been the other woman a couple of times before, and this is what I've learned. It will end in tears. They never leave their wives, but they will make you feel like you're the one who understands how hard it is for them. You're the fun one, the one who gets the physical pleasure, the short snippets of bliss. It's amazing how quickly you start longing for the mundane. You suddenly want to do his laundry, go and do the food shopping together and get lost at IKEA looking for light bulbs, because that's not allowed. But that's not where this is going. I trust myself not to go there. I burnt my hand on the stove enough times now to shy away from the heat. Welcome to episode 5.
Sorry, I can't come to the phone right now. I'm caught in Dixand. Please leave your message after the tone.
So what is Dixand and why should it come with a warning sign? There is this film with Rebel Wilson and that gorgeous woman from 50 Shades. She's Melanie Griffiths and Don Johnson's daughter, Dakota. It's called How to Be Single. Quite a funny film if you get a chance to see it. Rebel refers to getting sucked into a guy's vortex as being caught in his Dixand. So this is what's on topic today. We all have that friend, or we've been that friend who meets a guy and then drops off the planet of the earth completely. I have been that friend. New love can be so exciting and all-encompassing that there's no bandwidth left for much else. It can swallow us whole and it can feel like every waking second is about that new person that we met. When do we get to see them again? What are they doing right now? Do you think they'd like this jumper for Christmas? We're suddenly caught in their orbit. Yeah, it's wonderful to walk around all starry-eyed, seeing the world in technicolor like we're on our fourth tab of acid, but it comes with great risk, the risk of losing oneself, drowning in the Dixand. How do we balance meeting someone new whilst keeping a full life for ourselves without dropping everything we were so into before we met them? This is what I refer to in the intro of this podcast, becoming so damn comfortable being single that when you meet someone, they're not a life raft, they're an added bonus. Because until being single feels comfortable, of course meeting someone is going to fill that void if it still exists within. If we don't feel whole as a person, we'll always long for another to complete us. Damn you, Jerry Maguire. That famous movie line gave fuel for delusion for so many of us. So part of healing this pattern is to become your best friend, essentially. This is where practicing self-trust can come in handy. If we don't feel safe on our own, but find solace as soon as we're in relationship, one of the underlying causes may be that we don't fully trust ourselves when we're on our own. Practicing self-trust can be done with simple habits, like if you decide to do something, you stick to it, no matter what. So you decided to get up at 5 a.m. Do it. You decided to save £100 every month. Do it. You decided not to eat sugar for 4 weeks. Don't. You weren't going to drink and dial? I hope you didn't. Because if you keep letting yourself down and going against promises you've made yourself, guess what? You won't be able to trust yourself. And that keeps feeding the belief that you're unsafe. Because who has your back if you don't have it? I'm currently in the process of practicing self-trust. So last weekend I was at a hen do and I had decided to stay sober all weekend. And I did. I had 2 glasses of mulled wine all weekend. And I came home on Sunday and I was so damn proud of myself. And I had a great time. All memories intact. So if I keep sticking to promises I make myself, eventually my subconscious mind will trust that I'm not going to let myself down. And that's pretty powerful stuff. I highly advise to spend this time as a single person to really discover what it is that lights you up. What do you love doing? What are some goals you have in life and how can you take steps towards them? so that when you meet someone, you already know who you are. You know what you love, you know what your direction in life is. And this is, by the way, super duper attractive to the other person. You have a strong sense of self, you know what your non-negotiables are, and you have a full life. You don't just drop everything as soon as the new love interest says that they have a day off to see you. You compromise, but you know your priorities and you have them in order. You stick to plans that were already made. You don't let yourself or your friends down. This is how you become high value, because time with you is suddenly more precious. You know, I'm candid, right? So this is most definitely a case of do as I say, not as I do, because I'm still learning all of this. It's years of reprogramming, but it can definitely be untangled with consistent habits so that you learn to trust yourself fully. What else can we do to prevent getting stuck, sucked? What else can we do to prevent getting sucked into the dick sand? It often happens at the start of a relationship when we're in that exploratory phase. Just remind yourself that there's no rush. If the other person is equally interested and invested in getting to know you, take your time. Hopefully you'll have years of exploring each other, spending time together. I'm not sure how familiar you are with attachment styles, but for people who lean more towards anxious attachment, losing yourself in a relationship is definitely more common than if you lean more avoidant, for example. Someone with an avoidant attachment style, they would protect their own identity by withdrawing when things get a little bit too intimate. This is why sometimes after a romantic weekend away, the more anxious partner would feel really connected, whereas the avoidant partner would need to retreat, decompress, and spend time alone. So that can be very unsettling for the more anxious partner who is finally at peace with being so close to the other person. Do you see the dynamic here? It's called the anxious avoidant trap, and it will most definitely be covered in a future episode. It's quite an interesting theme, this, and very classic as well, that anxiously attached people often pair up with avoidant attached people because they're sort of drawn to each other like moths to a flame. They reaffirm each other's core beliefs. If you want to familiarize yourself with the attachment styles in the meantime, do tune into Stephanie Riggs' podcast here on Spotify called On Attachment. She explains it brilliantly and really simply as well, and may just shed some light if you find yourself in romantic relationships that they give you anxiety or you waver between breaking up and staying together. Details in the show notes here as well. Another thing that can help with self-trust is to get your finances in order. If we can rely on ourselves to be the sole provider of our own needs, such as food and shelter, that's a solid foundation for self-trust. It's not uncommon for someone to feel unable to leave an unhappy marriage or relationship because when we're paired up, finances tend to be better. You split the bills, the rent, the food, etc. So the thought of going out there on your own without a safety net to catch you if you don't have money left over at the end of the month can be pretty daunting. This is why some people stay in partnership past expiry date, because of that fear, the distrust in self. How will I make it on my own again? One of the things I found so attractive about my previous long-term boyfriend was that he was hyper-independent. He was self-employed, and I don't think I've ever met someone who had the perfect combination between loving the finer things in life but also not having any shame when it comes to what to do for money. He's a carpenter, but would often say that if it came down to him not getting carpentry work, he would do something else, anything else, knowing that he could fully rely on himself to bring home the bacon. Pride just didn't get in the way. Excellent survival skills. When we broke up, I had some good savings under my belt. I had a steady job. I had my own car that I'd bought outright, and my overheads were minimal. But if I'd had the added stress of financial worry after separating from someone I considered my family, it would have been so much harder. We really shouldn't expect the worst when we're in relationship, but I highly recommend, especially if you have a tendency to become codependent, create a safety net for yourself by squirreling away some money for a rainy day. It just adds some much needed independence within the relationship as well. we have to remember that despite all that's written about love and how two become one, merging together, this union still consists of two separate individuals with your own unique identities. So how are we doing? Are we confident that we won't fall into the dick sand of our next boo? Only time will tell. But until then, keep building yourself up. And if you feel stuck or need some support with being that single best self, send me a DM. My Insta handle is The Single Best Life, and you can also reach out through the website thesinglebestlife.com. There's nothing really happening on that website, but you can contact me that way. At the moment, it's just a landing page until I have some more time to do something about it. Watch that space. If you're enjoying the content, please do leave a 5-star review so we can climb up those search results as well. Thank you to everyone who's already left a star rating. I love you. You know that section earlier where I stumbled on my words? Well, I was going to cut that out, but I didn't, because that's another little exercise in accepting things as they are. For those who know me well, they know that I'm a bit of a perfectionist, so leaving that in there unedited is fully intentional. Also a little bit uncomfortable. One of my new favorite mantras is think progress, not perfection. And no, I don't know who said it. It was one of those memes on social media. If I would have let my perfectionism get in the way, we wouldn't be on episode 5 right now. There's honestly never a perfect time to launch anything. Sometimes we just have to go for it. What actually helped me launch my first episode was listening back to first episodes of a bunch of podcasters who I listened to that are now 100 episodes deep. Turns out they too sounded a little clumsy in the beginning. Things didn't flow as smoothly. Perhaps the sound quality wasn't excellent either. But they did it. They started. And now look at them. Sometimes we're our own worst enemy. I don't have time for that BS anymore. Give me the mic. I'm going to do this. There are people out there doing things I dream of doing, not necessarily because they're particularly good at it, but because they believe in themselves. And quite frankly, something changes when you hit 40. You give less of a damn about what other people think. If someone happens to think that you're annoying, you let them. Like Mel Robbins says, just let them. Ah, what a relief. Often, it's exactly that fear of what other people think of us that holds us back from being the best versions of ourselves. Remember, nothing's personal. So what lighthearted note can we finish on this time then? I think that Rubik's Cube guy needs some more praise. Have you seen this guy? For those of you not on TikTok, do yourselves a favor and Google Rubik's Cube guy video. This guy has put the nerd back in focus. Now, every girl wants to sleep with him and every guy wants to be him. He's the epitome of smooth. He solves the Rubik's Cube at the same time as he lip syncs to Jack Harlow and gives us the bedroom eyes. Whew, are we getting hot in here or what? I've seen a couple of videos responding to his video from women saying, like, he's only 22. Well, let me tell you, there's a perfectly good reason for women in their 40s to be drawn to men in their 20s. And this is why. So according to Health News and the National Institutes of Health, women reach their peak orgasmic frequency in their 30s and have a constant level of sexual capacity up to the age of 55, with little evidence that aging affects it in later life. Whereas men's sex drives seem to peak in their 20s, and begin to decrease in their 30s. Men in their 40s and older are also more likely to have problems with sexual function. So there you have it. Us women who are drawn to younger men want someone to keep up with our libido. Whether younger men can hold our spectrum of emotions in a way that makes us feel safe to express ourselves, that's a whole other topic. Because I dare say that an older woman who knows herself and has firm boundaries, she won't. If not demand a man who can stand solid as an oak when she storms and just wants to be heard and held. Until next time, lots of self-love.